So, Amy won the immunity challenge, and that freed us up to vote for who we were going to vote for next, which was Chris. For some reason, it didn't feel like that Chris was going to be home, and Eliza wasn't.
Well, there you have it, folks. Fans of Survivor, and they're some 20 million strong, watched lovely Leanne Slaby get voted off last week, Thursday at 8, I saw it. Leanne is, by the way, a favorite of our producer, who actually wanted to ask her out on a date, if she'd come to Seattle and date another recently divorced radio producer.
And another dog lover.
Mm-hmm. But we're not going to start there. No, we'll talk about Survivor first.
Save that.
Save that in case she hangs up. Oh, are you on?
Hi.
Hi, Leanne. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I, you know, my nephew was on the show.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. So, and he was quite a character. one of the things he told me is that when you get back and you actually watch the episodes, you will see that you're being played not by other members of the tribes, but also by the network in terms of how they want to portray you. No one more so than you last week when here you are, you know, about to be voted off. They come to you and you're like, la-di-da, I'm not worried. And so that must have been fun for you to watch, as well as, I want to hear how you feel about Chris, who basically every week now, and you've seen the episodes, sits and talks behind the women's back about how easy women are to screw up and manipulate and how they're basically bitches that fight amongst themselves and all this. How did you feel about Chris before you saw the shows, and how do you feel about him now?
He was really likable at camp, you know, when we were out there.
Just like guys you would start to date, and then later...
Wow, he seems so nice.
You would find out that they robbed a bank.
He was funny, he worked, and, you know, he could joke around with them. So he was cool. And then, this is a surprise, seeing all these confessionals with him saying whatever. But you know what, there's some truth to what he says. I mean, it's true. Look what's happening.
It's true that you can, basically what he said last time is, I'm just going to twist them around and tattle on some of them and watch the women self-destruct. So you have actually a grudging admiration for how he's been playing people.
A little bit. I mean, I'm a little disappointed in the women. Why couldn't we stick together? Okay, yes, we were going to vote off Eliza, but only to keep Chris around one more week to
vote him off.
Yeah, we'd vote him off eventually, but he was a hard worker, and Eliza didn't do anything. And the smaller the numbers, the more help we needed. So we thought, oh, yeah, no problem. We'll just vote Chris off.
I wonder about that strategy, which seems to crop up in Survivor often. And I see it in real life, too, in water cooler talk around the business. Sometimes weak people are kept around so that the strong people can feel like there's someone to pick off if something goes wrong.
That's a good point. That's interesting. I mean, I think Eliza was, she didn't seem to have much gameplay up until last week. But, she was kind of like the little, annoying little sister at times and that kind of thing. But most of the time, I think we kept her around just because she would have been easy to dispose of eventually.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And Leanne, when that moment comes and you've lasted so long in the show and you've put up with physical and emotional stress and hardship, and that moment does come that you got pretty close but you know you're not getting the $1 million, is there a material girl disappointment in you on that?
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I wanted to win. I was so mad to be gone. I didn't want that to happen. I wish, and I could kick myself for being so, you know, blind to it, and the things I did, and mistakes I made, I definitely wanted to win. I hated looking over at Sarge and Chad and thinking, boy, it would suck to be out of the game. And then 5 minutes later,
and then you're right,
that's
it does.
Me.
So now Julie obviously really wants to win and is willing to do a lot. To win. She's willing to sunbathe nude. If you thought sunbathing nude could make the difference, would you go back and work it on the beach?
No, there's nothing good about me sunbathing nude.
Oh, come on.
I don't think so, no.
We would all beg to differ, but you're saying that Julie outranks you in that.
Absolutely. She's like 20 years younger than me. Okay.
But the number one show on television right now is Desperate Housewives. The hot, vamping 40-year-old housewives are the hit sensation. Tell me, you had the power, you just didn't use it.
Anyway. You had the power to stay in Kansas all along.
So, all right, now, before we go, there are a couple things we have to get to that are way more important than the show Survivor. And that is some interesting life facts about you that are astounding and way, way above and beyond the norm. For example, in 1998, you did something that very few people will do. It's risky.
Do you think that few people would do it if they had, I mean, if someone they loved needed a kidney? Do you think?
I hope more people would.
Somebody would not do it.
I'm afraid there's a lot of people out there who wouldn't
really?
Be as, yeah.
So you view it as anybody would do this if they had this situation.
Well, you know, if it's family, the people you love. I mean, my father, he gave me life.
Okay, so
how often do you get the opportunity to pay him back?
Tell me the story. Your father came to you, and
he's diabetic, and in 1998 his kidney started failing. So the whole family got tested. We were all willing to do it. It really came down to I think I was the best match, and my lifestyle allowed me to take the time off of life basically to have the surgery and. It was successful, and he never rejected once, and it's still working perfectly 6 years later.
How about that? For her dad, she gave him a kidney.
Now, did you do it in Vegas with a bathtub full of ice like most folks do?
No.
No, she did it with
perfectly well. So you weren't nervous about it? I mean, there was never even any question in your mind.
There was no question. I mean, there was no hesitation. Of course, there was nervousness, for both of us. And I think the rest of my family had it harder because they had to sit and wait and make sure that both of us were okay, But, there was no hesitation.
Wow. Yeah, it means she would put her life on the line for family members. I think that's astounding. But when Christmas came around that year, did you have a nice BMW with a ribbon on it?
Another big screen, Daddy.
Yeah. What did I mean? Daddy has to have done something nice for his little girl.
No, but Dad, we have a kidney party every year, and we have a cake that's shaped like a kidney, and I get a nice little gift from my dad every year, a little token of appreciation.
Leanne, a quality gal on Survivor, and she will be, of course, one of the
final
jurors.
Jury,
right.
That's right.
So I have it that. I obviously you can't say how you will vote, but Chris is not automatically eliminated for his views on how easy women are to manipulate.
I think that anybody left right now can do something to really make me mad or do something to make me respect them, so it's really up in the air.
You'll watch like the rest of us. Leanne, thank
it.
You. All right, take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's a new return policy for lots of stores. They're going to start saying no to what are called serial exchangers. Serial exchangers being someone who buys lots of stuff and returns lots of stuff. In other words, after Christmas when you know, and by the way, people don't just do this at Christmas. People do this year-round. My wife has not done this particular thing that I'm going to mention, but she feels no compunction about exchanging things.
Okay.
I liked blue yesterday. I don't like blue today. Bring it back.
Okay.
Whereas I can't live that way. I feel that once I've bought something, I've made someone's day. I've brightened their day.
Mm-hmm.
Their,
stimulated the economy.
Put money in their till, and mm-hmm. I made a decision. And I feel that every time I take something back, I'm raising the cost of doing business, and raising it for everybody.
Okay.
And so I would feel a certain amount of conscience that I'd have to have a good reason to take it back. Lots of people are not like that. They view this the same way Christine Gregoire views votes. She's going to snatch them up wherever she can
find
them.
No inconvenience is too great to make sure that every gift counts.
As long as it's legal.
Mm-hmm.
And so retailers are clamping down on this with new technology. Guess, the Gene people, Staples, Sports Authority. They're using this service called Verify-1. The company is called Return Exchange, and they help retailers decide whether to deny returns or exchanges by creating a track record on you as a shopper.
What?
In other words, if I go in and exchange something, they're going to be able to look up my shopping profile. Don't you? You know, this is this is just the next evolutionary step of the barcode scanner. I mean, somewhere, hopefully no one ever looks at it, they know how many jujubes I bought in 1986.
Mm-hmm. You had quite a problem back then, too.
I did have a problem.
Got you some help.
Retailers say they're on the lookout for serial wardrobers. Now, this is the type of person I've... Do you know what a serial wardrober is?
You wear it and take it back?
Casey, do you know any?
No.
You don't know any?
Look how coy she looks.
My son, Keith, once told me he was going to do this, and I chopped his head off, figuratively. These are people who have a party or a dance on Friday night. So Friday, they go to Kenneth Cole. They buy pants they can't afford from a friendly guy who spends a little time, extra time on the inseam.
You bet they do. Tuck that up there, son. That's good.
And then on Saturday, after one wearing, they return it.
I thought you couldn't return something that had been worn.
Huh,
listen to that.
I worked retail. You see people will try to return things to stores they didn't even buy it from, and it works.
Yeah, I tried it on for 6 hours.
Yeah.
I danced, I drove home to date, and I didn't find it pleasing.
I liked this color yesterday. Anyway, these serial wardrobers buy an outfit, wear it once, maybe even twice, then they return it. There are also shoplifters who'll steal merchandise if you can get out the door with it, like what's her name, that actress?
Oh, Winona?
Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
If you can do a... Remember that it was like, do a Winona Ryder. If you can do a Winona Ryder at one of them fancy stores, you can walk back in and return it.
Some stores don't have a receipt required even for return policies under a certain limit.
There are also people who are price switchers.
What's that mean?
What they do is they change price tags on items and return one item with a higher amount on it. They'll buy two pants, one for $9.99, one for $100, switch the price tags, and return the wrong pants. Return exchanges verify one system works like this. When a customer wants to return an item, the sales clerk asks for his or her driver's license. Swipe it into the machine. The shopper's name, address, and birth date is logged into a database. And any time you want to return something at that store or any store with that gizmo, they know who you are.
Creepy.
All information is stored.
Hey, Big Brother.
It's your privacy. Do you mind? Or are you grateful?
Yeah.
You do mind?
I kind of feel like if I'm going to not be allowed to return something that legitimately want to return...
The only guy who would mind is a cross-dresser, and here you are.
A bit hurt by this. I feel a bit revealed.
Yeah.
A bit,
all right, so tell me why you mind. Presumably you're not a cross-dresser.
No, I don't have the hygiene for cross-dressing. I barely can shower twice a week if I put my mind to it. If I've got a legitimate return, if I've got something that I've... You know, is this going to affect me? Are they going to tell me that I can't return something because other people have abused the system?
No, it would only be because you have abused the system. In other words, you'd get a certain amount of... But they'd have... basically, the company, each individual company, could decide when to tell you, no, you're a serial exchanger. We're not taking any more returns from you.
What if you're just a serial bad gift getter?
You just get crud.
You just
for
always... And you don't want to hurt Aunt whatever's feelings, so you take it back discreetly.
I think that I don't know specifically what each store would do, but I envision it being like this. Well, Mr. O'Neill, this is your third trip back with those pantaloons.
Pantaloons.
Hey, they were hot in the 80s. I look great in them.
And I just want to let you know that our return policy, which is folded up and you signed it, it's on the back of this in print that only an aunt's child could see.
It's not my signature.
It says that after three returns, we're not honoring anymore. So we'll take this back, but it's your last return.
So I'm forced to wear the pantaloons then?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, what may happen is you may say, screw you, I'm never coming to this store again, right?
I probably would. I get a little vocal. And they'll say, fine. But
they
don't work with
they don't want your business. Yeah. Because you are costing them more money than you are bringing in. The exchange rate at a department store, do you know what it is? 13%. That's ridiculous. You people.
13% of people are bringing stuff back?
13% of the stuff that's sold is brought back and exchanged or returned. This is as a percentage of total sales, not just Christmas. I know it's worse at Christmas.
Wow.
This is a percentage of total sales in 2003. You know what? Just write somebody a check for Christmas. Don't even bother buying them a gift.
You and the checks.
I'm so Scrooged now.
Jeez.
First plastic trees and now this. But I mean, if...
One out of every eight things sold is brought back?
More than that, at Christmas time, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Well, is it nuts or is it in today's society? There are so many choices when it comes to pantaloons. And other
keep bringing those up. I thought I was going to be safe.
It's like an obsession.
I like the way the fabric feels on my bare knees. I just do.
There are so many choices that the odds of you actually getting it right for your 14-year-old niece are very small.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So does this mean we should stop trying?
Gift certificates.
I hate the card.
Gift certificates is basically, but then at that point it's cash. Chris.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think a lot of the returns are people who are just impulsive. It's like a, what do they call it, retail therapy. And I don't think they take anybody else's anyone else's interest into their thinking. You know, if you buy something and you return it, there's a credit card processing fee, and oftentimes getting that refund raises that processing fee, and you're just piling on to what the cost of doing business is, and that's always going to be passed along to the consumer.
That's right. That's how I started this, was saying that I feel guilty making a return just impulsively because it costs people money, and I am like a welfare recipient at that point.
You're draining
and if
the
I don't
system.
Need welfare, I'm not going to apply for it. Don't you agree, Chris?
I do agree. And I think if there's generally businesses feel comfortable returning things for a legitimate reason, it's a wrong size, it's bad quality, I think that's, you stand behind your product. But when something gets abused, not only does it create a chain of events that cost the business a lot more money, it frustrates the business itself. It's a morale killer for a smaller business.
You bet it is.
If it's a large ticket item.
Chris, people who are serial exchangers are committing an evil act unto society. Would you go that far?
Sometimes you feel like it when it kills your sales for the day.
Oh, you're in retail. He's in retail.
You vilify him right away in your mind, but...
These people should be imprisoned in a stockade to be newly built in malls all across America. Would you go that far?
I would think they just have to be forced to work retail.
Whoa!
Thank you, Chris.
Call the governor.
1-800-252-1025. Returning is evil.
What, do you have certain stores you said are already vying into this?
Yeah, lots of them. They're buying into this. It's a hot new gizmo. Rob in Spanaway.
Yeah.
How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing fine. I'm a retail manager, and we already track...
these evil people.
As far as who does returns, we do that on a normal basis because we take your name and information when you return things. And it's not. It's always the same people.
It is, aren't they?
You can look at your ledger on the end of the day and see sometimes people will return things 2 and 3 times in a day.
And you don't even need these people as customers. You want them to get the heck out of your store.
Oh, hell yes.
Yeah, go away. Don't buy from me.
Yeah,
and then they say the most common thing is, that's why I don't shop here.
Yes, because you people, you want me to buy it and keep it.
That's why I don't shop here. Well, if you didn't shop here, how'd you
why
get
are you
it
here
the
three
place?
Times a week there?
That's right. Why
Gizmo?
Are you on our evil person list? So they're liars, too, aren't they?
Oh, God, yeah.
All of them.
And they'll tell you that the product's defective, and then you check it out, and you show them it's right, and, then my mom didn't like it.
By the way, the evil people who are serial exchangers will lie direct to your face about why they bought it, about make up something that's wrong with it. They will tell you anything because they have no respect for you, and they don't care about your livelihood or your business.
Thank you, Bob. You said it all right there.
Okay. They make my ass look fat. No, ma'am, the Haagen-Dazs is making your ass look fat. The pants just accentuate that attribute.
Who agrees or disagrees? Heidi. Hello, Heidi.
Hello, how are you? Boy, I agree with you.
Oh, this is a strange day in my life.
I heard that.
Go ahead.
I work for Nordstrom, and we just see all types of people that come in there and exchange things, and it's just awful. It's people that just rent clothing all the time on a daily basis.
And Nordstrom would be the kind of store that people would take advantage of because you're so known. The whole Nordstrom family is known for customer service.
That's right.
You guys will take anything back.
Yeah.
Anything.
Are you going to start this policy at Nordstrom's, cracking down on the serial exchangers?
I know they're talking about doing something.
They ain't going to do this.
You don't think they'll do it?
I don't know exactly everything that they're doing.
Nordstrom is a safe haven for us serial returners, Bob.
Yeah, I think
they
should.
We look at them like a white beacon of here it comes.
It's just that, you know, it really affects our paychecks, and it's really sad when they come in and they say, my grandmother bought me this, and it just doesn't fit, and it's kind of like I want to say, don't get your grandmother involved in this.
Your grandmother has nothing to do with this.
Your grandmother died, and you know it.
Heartless wench.
And it's just so sad.
Thank you, Heidi. David is in Issaquah. Dave?
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
All right.
Good. I'd like to totally agree with you, first of all. My wife and my mother-in-law are chronic, and her sister, too, are chronic returners, and they fail to, do some thought before they buy it.
No thought whatsoever.
Buy a bunch, you know?
Impulsive, yes.
Yeah, exactly, because it's on sale, and then they end up taking it back, and it's like not more than 20 minutes after, or maybe I shouldn't have bought that. I think I'll take it back tomorrow. And I'm
right,
like,
and here you are, David. I'm going to guess you're the breadwinner, right?
Well, actually, we do half and half right now.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
Yeah. And shut your mouth.
I would never return something. It's like embarrassing, you know, unless it's like.
But you have a work ethic
mm-hmm.
to you. You
yeah.
understand that by returning something, you're committing an act of increasing the cost of doing business for
yeah.
everybody and just doing
exactly.
it frivolously.
Exactly. And she has no clue. I mean, if she does, she doesn't care. I mean, I think that's what it is. They just don't care, you know?
Thank you. Danny is in Granite Falls. Danny?
How's it going?
All right, Dad.
Yeah, I've had people come in. For instance, a few weeks ago, I had a guy come in. He bought an expensive torque wrench from us. Two or three days later, I'm in the store. He brings it back, says it doesn't work. But it sure has a lot of wear and tear on it. And I asked him, well, okay, well, can he get you something else that works? He says, no, I've fixed everything. I just need to return the torque wrench. I didn't take it back.
You refused.
I told him sorry.
You used this torque wrench.
He did. It was very used. I mean, he still had the grease on it and all. He didn't even try to clean it up and fake it.
You didn't tell him, like, what do you think this is, Nordstrom's or something?
Yeah, where do you think you're at? Another couple years ago, a guy brought back a skill saw. And he had actually used it. Then he took it apart, and he could tell inside there that he actually disconnected one of the wires. So, of course, it didn't work when he brought it back.
He broke it on purpose?
He took it apart on purpose, brought it back, not working. Of course, you know, at the time, I plug it in, it doesn't work. You know, I give the guy the money back. I take it back to my back desk there, and I take it apart to see if I can fix it, because, you know, I might be able to use it for myself, and I see something's been purposely disconnected.
Who else out there will speak up on this? 1-800-252-1025. So far, we haven't heard from one person who wants to defend unlimited returns. Not one. Not a single person. Are you cowering in fear? Is there anybody out there who believes that you should have the right to return as many things as you like? Whenever you like.
A CRAP? Chronic return after purchaser?
1-800-252-1025.
Roxanne, you don't have to wear that dress tonight. Walk the streets for money. You don't care if it's wrong or if it's right.
It's a big can of worms. I'm hoping we'll get some of the return exchange fiends to try and defend themselves because they cost a ton of money. Department stores, 13% is the average. The percentage of things that are returned yearly. It's a waste of energy, fuel, pollution,
yep.
time, which I think the people who have the most time to shop are the people who are least productive in society anyway.
Uh-oh.
And here I'm they are wasting hours of their time. Well, come on.
Hey, I live with her. I'm not going home.
1-800, the phones are pretty jammed, so don't try to call now. But when we move along here, 1-800-252-1025. Zach in Seattle, any defense for the cereal exchangers?
Well, I don't know about the cereal exchangers, but maybe some of us who return stuff. I think they need to take into account not only how much you buy, but whether you're exchanging or returning. Home Depot, they flagged me a couple of times for returning stuff, but you know I returned maybe $1,000 worth of toilet products, whatever, but I've just spent $10,000 trying to rebuild my house. You know, I think there should maybe be a little bit of allowance for something like that.
Clearly, there needs to be some judgment call. If you're a construction guy and they have a policy at a place like Home Depot, they know what they're doing. They also know how probably, if they have one of these little gizmos, how much you spend. So I agree with you there. But
yeah. But
for people who just buy stuff and return it routinely, because they just had a change of heart, I think that ought to be stopped.
Well, I don't know. I mean, do they return it? Do they exchange it? Because I imagine if you exchange, there's no cost to the retailer.
Oh,
once something's brought back, you can't sell it for full price again.
Not only that, there's a huge cost to society in wasted time. There's a huge cost in restocking it, moving it around. Employees have to do all the work, and they're not free.
I suppose that's true.
Suppose.
Well, I mean, I don't know the business myself. I'm the consumer. You know?
I just bring it back,
and it shows back up on the shelf.
And when you take back $1,000 in toilet parts, they're not used, right?
No, they're not.
Okay, good.
Right.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you.
Who should be next? Mike, do you have a suggestion?
How about Rusty?
Rusty, one of my favorite names. Rusty.
Hello.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Why anyone would name someone Rusty, I don't know, but it's...
My grandfather's fault.
Was it? It's a wonderful name. I love the name. I have several good friends. Rustys are always fun people.
Uh-oh.
They are. You never... Rusty is never a killjoy. He's the life of the party.
Oh.
Rusty's here!
I don't go to too many parties.
I knew one Rusty was named because his mom hadn't had a baby in 12 years.
Come on.
That's why they called him Rusty.
So she finally popped one out, and she was Rusty.
I was the first one, yeah.
Okay, why should returns be allowed unfettered?
Well, I don't know that they shouldn't be allowed, but the retailers that go out of their way to set things up in front of the cash registers to entice people to impulse buy, those people have no right to say you can't return these items.
Well, we're talking now Snickers bars and Star Magazine. What are you talking about?
We're talking CDs, and we're talking CD players and VCRs. Walk through Kmart one day up toward the...
So you're saying the poor store owner had psychological control of my brain, and that's not fair?
Well, in some cases, yeah. I mean, there are people out there that see something that say, oh, God, I got to have that.
I'm weak.
Then they get home, and guys like me say, take that back.
shopped again.
There's a fundamental difference in the way men shop and the way women shop.
Yes.
Men shop to go get something they need. Women shop to go see if there's something they need.
Oh, so true. And my wife took me into a freaking... all these stores when we were in Vegas. It was like Neiman Marcus and this and that. And I went, and I said, well, I'm in Vegas. I'm going to humor her. I'll walk. And she was like, you're not having fun. And I'm like, look, I'm here.
Oh.
And you're like, what are we looking for? She goes, I'll let you know when I see it.
We're not looking for anything. No, I know she's not going to buy anything. At least she's not going to buy anything. But she wants to see that's the new fall fashion. You know.
Yeah, and then they think of, you know, poor Aunt Kay that she hasn't seen in 3 years, and we're going to buy her that, and then it sits in the closet for 4 years.
All right, Rusty.
Wow.
Ellen.
Yes.
Your wife is a compulsive returner.
Yes.
Do you try to stop her?
Not really. Again, she'll buy, you know, she'll go in and she'll buy 10, 20 items. And knowing she's probably only going to keep two or three, I think it's probably
it's premeditated.
She doesn't want to spend the time in the store, I think, figuring out is it a size 6 or a size 8 she needs.
She needs to see if it matches the draperies and the curtains and the wall color.
No, hey, she just, I think she gets the stuff. She, on the one hand, doesn't like to spend a lot of time in the store, yet she does spend a lot of time there, comes home, she'll have all this stuff, and ultimately, you know, a large percentage of it goes back because she's trying to figure out, does she, you know, which color does she want? And actually, a store like Nordstrom kind of encourages that. Well, you're not sure if you want this, this, or that. Why don't you just take them all and return the ones you don't want?
And they will, because the salespeople know that that's part of their service at Nordstrom. A lot of stores now are looking at how much it costs them to do that. And in Nordstrom, you know, if a store wants to charge extra, understand why, that's why you're going into one of these fancy, schmancy stores where everything costs a ton of money, because you're paying for the right to try before you buy.
Exactly. Well, and I don't think, again, I don't think people realize the cost of returns. I'm in the warehousing and distribution business, and I actually used to work for Nordstrom for several years, and I know when the catalog sales came out, the return rate was 28% to 32% on apparel. And other,
that's,
you know,
ridiculous.
It's a lot higher than the 13% you're talking
These
about.
Women should be stopped.
Oh, what a catalog! What are you supposed to do? Hold the picture up your chest? It looks like it fit in a catalog.
But this is like drug addict behavior at this point. It's bad. All right, thank you. Here's Angie, who wants to defend it. Angie?
Yeah, I want to defend it. I have three kids, and I go to the mall. I can't take them all three in the dressing room to try on clothes because they'll, you know, climb underneath the doors and stuff. And so I take everything home and try on, and then most of the time, things don't fit. And so I think you should be allowed to return things.
You're afraid to bring your children into the mall?
Well, no, I'm afraid to bring them into the dressing room.
Three of them at one time in a dressing
room?
Three
of them at one time. I mean,
so what you do is you buy lots of clothes that might be close, you try them on at home, and then you return the ones.
Right. And then
you don't care what you don't care what this costs the store owner or the other people trying to put clothes on their kids.
Well, I spend a lot of money in the stores, though, so they make up for it.
So you having a lot of money makes it okay.
I don't have a lot of money, but
you're costing the poor moms who can barely clothe their kids extra money, but you don't care about them. You stamp right all over them. You don't care.
No, but I think that, I mean, I don't wear the clothes. I just take them home and try them on, and when they
don't, but you don't understand.
Then I take them back.
You're Angie, hello. It costs the store a lot of money to let you do that. They want to stop
it. Then they need to make kid-friendly dressing rooms.
Somewhere that Timmy can't poke his head under the next stall and see that lady's gray beard. You don't want to see that. That lady don't want to see Timmy's head popping under there.
All right, Angie. I understand the explanation, though. Thank you. Kim.
Hi.
You're a serial returner.
Yeah, I am. I go shopping. I shop for my husband. I shop for my kids. They aren't always with me. There's no way I'm going to be able to get them to try on the clothes in the dressing room.
This is the same excuse.
And sometimes I have to return. And there's no way I can try on a bra with my two boys. You know,
oh, come on. They're
12 and 11.
They're
12
and 11,
they don't
12
want to
and 11 but they're ready, believe me.
Well, no. They're preschoolers or kindergartners, you know. I mean,
well, then they're fresh off the teat anyway.
No. That's not how it works. But, I mean, even trying to keep
excuses.
In a dressing room for 3 minutes to try on a pair of jeans when they're standing right outside the door, it doesn't work.
You know, if it takes longer than a minute, they don't fit.
Well, no. If you've got two kids, guys don't have to shop with kids. That's the problem.
All right, thank you, Kim. The kid excuse.
There should be a kid holding pen. You know, a nice cage outside the dressing
room.
Well,
hey, this may be a good idea for stores because the women are giving you their excuse, and I think it's just an excuse. Medicate the kids; they'll be fine.
Oh, trank them,
tranquilize them. Scott.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Scott.
We're now
officially taking excuses for serial exchanging from people. 1-800-252-1025. Why I buy stuff and bring it back all the time.
Now, I was gonna disagree with you, but I've listened to the last two callers, and now I'm thinking maybe it's a good idea. But, you know, if you're going to have a problem with the wait, with the dressing rooms, you should, you know, medicate your kids or something. I don't know. But I was calling to disagree with you on returning because, like, my grandma might send me a pair of pants that don't fit me because I'm a big boy.
How big are you?
I am 6'6" and I weigh 250 pounds.
That's actually, that's big and tall, but it's not big, big, big.
It's not big.
You're
big,
proportioned
big.
Very well at 6'6", I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay.
But your grandma will buy you something off the rack and it's never going to work.
In her mind, you're 11.
Yeah. And so, yeah, in her mind, I'm really little and skinny, and, you know, my parents don't talk about my waist size, so I get the gift, and I'm like, crap, and, you know, I head to the store that she said she got it from and said, hey, I got this from a gift, and I need to return it. And they kind of, you know, roll their eyes, and they look at me, and they're like, oh, God, no, no, another one. And so I'm getting harassed because these, you know, people who buy a bunch of clothes and they try them on at home and then return them, they're killing me off.
Yeah, I think your return is legitimate, and you're getting the evil stare because of people like those last two women who literally buy knowing ahead of time, premeditated, that they're not going to keep everything. That should be stopped.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, there's a segment out there that this problem you're talking about, the serial returner, it actually serves, there's the same people that it serves well.
Who?
Me. I shop at the Nordstrom Rack, which should be called Sweaties, because everything in there has been worn at least once. You buy a pair of shoes at the Rack.
Is that where they put the returns?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what it is?
Oh, yeah.
Sweaties. Big
you
and
buy
sweaty?
A pair of, big and sweaties. You buy a pair
sweat
of shoes.
Sweat and stankies?
You buy a pair of shoes at the Nordstrom Rack, there's a footprint in them.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
KZOK. Mark Weingartner found himself in what could be considered a good news, bad news situation. The good news? This Florida State University creative writing professor had been chosen by one of the top publishing houses in the world over dozens of other writers to write the novel that was sure to be a high-profile bestseller, and it is. The bad news? He had the daunting responsibility of adding to the legacy of one of America's best-known fictional families. The Godfather, Don the Corleones. Even their creator, Mario Puzo, had resisted the temptation to revisit the characters of the Godfather saga. What trials and tribulations did Mark envision for Michael, Tom, and Johnny? Find out in the number 7 best-selling book on the New York Times bestseller list. It's called The Godfather Returns. Mark Weingartner, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show.
Thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Number 7.
7's good.
Is it climbing still?
It's first week on the list.
First week?
It debuted.
It's come up.
Bang, bang, kiss, kiss.
Oh,
people,
man,
are finding these in their beds if they're with the New York Times bestseller list, right?
You bet.
It's red. First off, how did this come about? Because this is very rare. Usually if an author writes, you know, like, you're not going to select somebody to write the next Harry Potter book because the gal who writes them is going to do it. So how did you get selected to
do it? And ordinarily, you know, in other novels, you know, like Jane Smiley's A Thousand Acres is a rewriting of Shakespeare's King Lear, but all the copyright considerations are taken care of for Mr. Shakespeare. In this case, Puzo actually, of course, did revisit the characters twice in the films, and then as he got older, he was continually bedeviled by his editor, John Karp, who's now the editor-in-chief at Random House, to continue the
bedeviled means the agent is called, the editor is called.
Mario, baby, we can move some product, you darling sweetie pie. They're begging, they're knocking down my doors. Put a little ink on paper, give me something to sell.
I don't care if it sucks, they'll still buy it.
That's about
that's the bedeviling process.
But you know, the Godfather covers 10 years, and the two films just each cover 6-month periods afterwards. So, you know, in order to cover the sweep of the Corleones, there is a lot of story still left on the table. And so they did a contest. I was one of the first people they contacted. John Karp had
there was a contest amongst writers.
Yeah, I got an email.
What an honor to win a contest amongst writers to take over a franchise.
Yeah, they're just writers. You know,
you guys are Superman to us. Are you kidding? I can't write. If I have to write a note to my aunt to thank her for a Christmas present, I look at it as like, oh, I have cramp. I have block.
Well, it wasn't designed to be a contest. John had really just contacted 4 or 5 people he thought might do a good job. He loved my last book, Crooked River Burning, and thought I could do it. And what happened is somebody's agent leaked it to the New Yorker. And then once it was a leak, now it was a bigger story in the media.
Right.
And then they actually had hundreds of proposals that they got, but they wanted somebody who was about Puzo's age when he wrote The Godfather.
Right, that's cool.
Who had people forget this.
How old is Puzo now?
Puzo is very dead.
He's dead.
He didn't get any older. That was the thing is that he wouldn't.
When did he die?
99.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
And he'd given his blessings to it, but right before he died,
Well, that's why he's not upset at you.
Yeah. Well, no, he, yeah, exactly. If I got the story right, he wouldn't do anything with it. He said, but once I'm gone, then you're free to do what
you want.
He liked
the idea of it, actually. Right. He just felt like he'd said what he had to say about them in the two subsequent sequels.
Right.
And he also, his son, who's Tony, who's his literary executor, said he had the very Sicilian idea of loving the idea of being a great earner from beyond the grave. So his conditions were, you know, he wanted it to happen, but they had to wait until after Mario died, and they had to get a lot of money for it.
Mark, what do you have any real life experience with mob type people?
I do. When I was working on Crooked River Burning, I talked to a couple low level guys in the Cleveland mob.
Low level?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because people who really did much of anything wouldn't tell you, and the people who said they did stuff didn't do it.
Yeah.
That's right. So they're low level, the braggers.
Yeah, so right.
The kind that tend to be expendable when things go wrong.
Right. Look, there's a new on-ramp. How convenient.
Yeah, guys who thought they were high-level guys. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you talk to some people, and does it scare you at all?
Well, no, not really. I mean, I'm writing about, you know, sort of, you know, the classic era of the mafia. My book begins right at the end of The Godfather, when the one murder at the end of the novel that you and movie that you never see, Tessio,
right,
played so memorably in the film by Abe Vigoda.
Abe Vigoda, you bet.
We don't get to see. It matters the most emotionally. You know, he's Vito's buddy. He's
right.
His capo.
Right.
And
sets up Michael.
Right. And so my novel begins with the murder of Tessio in 1955. You see it vividly, and it goes through all the great real life events of the American mafia in the late 50s and early 60s, and ends in 1962. So, you know, I'm writing about a kind of, you know, mafia classic era. In you know, most of the guys involved with that aren't with us anymore, so
right.
I'm not too concerned.
And it's lately the mafia is just such a hot topic for storylines. I mean, The Sopranos was huge.
Right.
They almost enjoy the notoriety when it's not, you know, coming from the FBI.
Oh, it's absolutely true. You know,
it's true.
Puzo invented the idea of calling a mafia don or boss the Godfather. No one actually really did that.
Come on.
And then after he did, everyone started doing
it. That's such a cool name!
Godfather!
Right.
We've had interviews with Italian-American societies who pretend to be upset about The Sopranos, and they're not. They're just getting some Italian-Americans.
Well, you know,
getting some time on the radio, and they love it.
Look, you're writing about, just the fact that you're writing about anybody means they're exceptional. I mean, every, you know, New England sea captain didn't go stalking white whales. You know, I mean, the idea, you know, that every Italian American is in the mob. Of course, they're not. These people are exceptional. They're strange. They're different, and that's why we're fascinated with them.
Mario Puzo's name is on the cover of the book. Very nicely put. It's created by Mario Puzo, Mark Weingartner. Mike, the question that everybody asks you: when's the movie out? Right now, you just were on the bestseller list. Read the book, but if eventually, there's got to be a movie.
Yeah, the book's just been out a week or so. We intentionally gave it to Hollywood late in the process for a variety of complicated reasons, there has been a kind of frenetic amount of conversation about this already. But my feeling is that we should just, you know, leave such matters to the Corleone family, who've proven to be very persuasive in matters of.
So you do want a movie? That's so other folks will help you out with that.
What a blessing that if the work's respected and appreciated enough that their movie gets to be made, you're then left with the problem of casting Michael Corleone, who's one of the most infamous figures in movie history. And then
you pick?
That,
well,
exactly.
Who, well,
Keanu
that
Reeves. I'm telling you right now.
Keanu Reeves?
Today we settle all family business.
He's got the voice, but I don't know about the look.
You know, the thing is, the people forget that in the first Godfather, other than Brando, almost all those actors were making their second or third feature.
Right. They were relatively
young,
new. Yeah.
And hungry and talented.
Right.
And, you know, great roles can be reinvented by great actors. And, you know, there's Hamlet, King Lear can be played by different actors.
Many.
So I really think that that's the way that they ought to go, but they probably won't end up asking me anyway.
Mark, what kind of guy are you in real life? I mean, you're writing this movie, you're writing this best-selling book.
We've
already got your career
results. Read the book.
you're writing this. Some writers go to a deserted shack on a beach in a lonely island when they write something, a murder mystery novel or whatever. Where do you go? What kind of room do you sit in to continue the story of The Godfather? Describe your surroundings.
Well, I have I built a cottage in my backyard to work in, so I work there. But I also went away to artist colonies a lot while I was writing this.
Artist colonies?
Which is kind of a weird cross between a bed and breakfast and a monastery for artists and writers.
Wow.
There's nudity.
Yeah. So you're given a room and you're fed and no one can knock on your door or bother you or anything. And it really sped up my progress.
Wait a minute. I've been there. That's the courtyard by Marion.
Yeah,
they call it an artist colony.
Yeah.
It's just basically any hotel.
Only you don't have to pay for it.
You don't have to pay for it?
Yeah.
The publisher sends you.
No, they're competitive. You know, okay. They're our art foundation.
Yeah, who's staying here now? Stephen King. Be careful of the dog.
Yeah. But, you know, ordinarily, I probably wouldn't have spent so much time away at this, but there was a lot of deadline pressure on the book.
Are you sitting in front of a little typewriter or
a
computer?
Everyone writes on a computer. I'm the oldest writer alive who's never written on anything but a computer. I have no idea what it would be like. Typewriter, longhand, I don't know.
Have a hard disk crash? Throw the thing through the window?
No, that's what people who don't know how to use computers have happened to them.
people like us.
I've never lost, knock wood, I've never lost a word of anything on a computer, and few competent people do.
What's the longest you'll ever have? I hear that. That's a very nice...
Phew,
if
I
they
didn't
do,
say
they
no.
wake up with Macintoshes at the foot of their bed. What's the longest you have ever experienced any kind of, be honest, writer's block?
I don't believe there's such a thing, you know?
Look
at you. Do you get to have broadcaster's block, DJ block, I don't feel like talking. And of course you probably don't sometimes, but you show up
because
they're paying you. You get up and you sit your butt down in the chair and you go to work. And I do the same thing.
Married? Kids?
Married kids. Yeah, you bet.
How many kids?
My wife's an attorney for the Florida Supreme Court. And,
well, thank you for the president, by the way.
Yeah.
Kudos to you, my
friend.
Hey,
you know what? We had nothing to do with that, if you recall. The Florida
it was the U.S. Supreme Court.
Florida Supreme Court voted twice to count all the votes.
Right.
So, however that would have turned out, we'll never know. But
he's defended himself at parties before.
I heard that. You were ready for that one, babe.
Yeah, and three kids.
Mark Weingartner, the book is The Godfather Returns. It's the number 7 best-selling book in the country. Thanks for dropping in.
Glad to be here.